Welcome, sports fans. We're your hosts, Carl,
Alex,
Jay, and this is Momentous Play.
Momentous Play is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated sells Guild Ball at the maximum discount allowed by Steamforge. Order $50 or more in product and receive free shipping on domestic orders or reduced shipping on international orders. You can find their web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Momentous Play. At the start of the episode, we will start a stopwatch. After 30 minutes, an alarm will sound, and the podcast will conclude. And the clock has started. I am your host, Jay, and joining me this week, as always, we have one Carl Chase. How are you doing today, Carl?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. And as a big surprise this week, we have a brand new host, one Alex Shaver. Hello, Alex.
Hello. I've jumped out of a podcast cake to surprise everybody.
Are you wearing pasties or anything?
Only.
Excellent. So, Bevan has decided that, due to some of the demands of real life, etc., that, podcasting was a little bit larger commitment than he realized it was going to be and thought that it would be best to, step back sooner than later from doing, the podcast with us. And so, I searched far and wide and decided that surely the best person to add in would be one Alex Shaver. So,
oh, that's so nice.
Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, if I assume there's some listener crossover from War Machine stuff, so some people may know me from Clockwork Vox, which is a now defunct podcast that I did with a friend of mine, JR, where basically we just yelled at everybody about War Machine for 30 minutes or so every week ish.
So really, beyond that, that should fit perfectly into our format is what I'm getting at.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, hopefully there's less self-righteous indignation that I throw at everybody.
I hope not.
Beyond that, you know, I've played War Machine Hordes for almost a decade, and I've been moving around a lot, so the opportunity to do that like has expanded, but also in the same way it's hard to move into a new, really well-established meta, so I've been kind of struggling with that a little bit, so I've kind of drifted away from War Machine and kind of into Guild Ball.
So for a long time you were living in St. Louis, is that correct?
Springfield, Illinois.
Springfield, okay. I mean, this is pretty much the same thing, isn't it?
Basically.
Sorry, that's a lie. It's not. and then you ended up moving recently to Portland?
Yep, and we've been here for about 6 months, and so we're about to pack up and move to Minneapolis, because when winter is coming, you go to Minneapolis, apparently.
That sounds like an awful idea.
Well, what are you going to do?
That's fair.
Move to Minneapolis.
Yeah, not move to Minneapolis. That's what you're going to do.
Guys, I love cross-country skiing. I don't know what you want from me.
So, I am just, so people can get a chance to know you better. You do have a little bit of a flavor of a hipster. Would you say that that's fair or unfair, Alex?
In that I dislike things when they become extraordinarily popular. I have thick rimmed glasses and a beard. Yes.
Okay. So I'm assuming that when you faced like this conundrum when you moved to Portland, because you hate things when they become popular, and you have many of the social markings of a hipster, but being a hipster is extremely popular in Portland.
Yeah. So I would say that moving here is not been coming to some hipster motherland, because everything, all of the quote-unquote hipsters out here, it's so intentional and deliberate that it becomes really annoying. So, like, I drive down the road now and just scream, can I swear?
Yeah. Heck yeah.
And just scream, like, these fucking hipsters all over the place with their fucking, like, just signs for their businesses that only have symbols on them. There's no name, and you sit down, of course there are fucking wildflowers at the table. Like, it just doesn't stop, and it becomes like, I've become like an old hipster, like a Portland native who's really pissy about what Portland is. I've kind of become that over the course of 6 months.
So off to Minneapolis to retire in the hipster.
Yeah, another hipster town. Yeah, Minneapolis, of course.
Okay, so you've mentioned you've done a lot of War Machine. How did you get into gaming?
Through, like most people, I suppose, through friends. I kind of reconnected with a few old friends of mine, and they were at the time, like in the interim when I wasn't really connected with them. They were all playing War Machine. They all picked up War Machine. So when I reconnected with them, I kind of, you know, did what most people do and jump into the thing that all their friends are doing. And, like, fell in love with it, kind of stuck with it. And it kind of, it opened a lot of doors for me in terms of deciding what my actual likes and dislikes are. So, like, in a way, War Machine kind of helped me kind of identify who I am as a person and kind of helped in that way. So, like, in a way, it's a really, really important and big part of my life, even if it's not something that I'm very actively doing right now.
I think that's one of the things that's really nice about gaming is that it provides a lot of gamers feel at least some level of being socially awkward. And so a game like War Machine or a game like Guild Ball, it allows you to have a social interaction with people in kind of a set structured way that feels enjoyable and not like if I go to a bar, it feels like the worst experience of my life. I fucking hate it. but, you know, something like playing a game with someone, even if it's a complete stranger, is something that, you know, is awesome. So.
Yeah, and it kind of forces you into situations where you're, like, having to resolve conflicts between people who you don't know very well. So it kind of teaches you how to do that. And, like, it's genuinely helped me a ton. It taught me that I like sports, for example. I didn't know that until I started playing War Machine.
Okay, so speaking of sports, your current obsession is Guild Ball.
Mm-hmm.
So what has, I guess, caught your eye or caught your, what have you liked about Guild Ball?
Well, honestly, a lot of it has been sports. This is weird, but, we decided not to get cable while we're out here. And, while Portland may not be like a super big sports town, like they are really into their soccer/football team and they're kind of into their basketball team. And you know, when I was living at home, we'd watch football frequently and I'd watch hockey frequently. So I've been kind of missing a couple elements from my life, which would be playing miniatures games, which while, like I said, you know, there is a community of War Machine players out here and it's very, very big, but, it's just, I was having kind of a hard time personally breaking into it. So I kind of, that's what kind of pushed me away from that. So I wasn't really doing that much and I wasn't really able to engage with sports as much. And so as you do, you spend some time on the internet. And as I do, I spend a lot of time on Twitter and, you know, you see people talking about Guild Ball and somebody, I think it was, Owen from Ireland, of a friend of mine, he said, hey, the rule book is free online. So I got the rule book and I read all the cards and then I read all the rules and I just kind of, I don't know, you like, then you watch one game and everything kind of starts to click and it all makes sense. And it got me from that, really. It was like a combination of Twitter and YouTube mostly.
It's kind of funny. Besides just myself, I've seen this with a lot of other people. Like I had people, had a lot of friends talking about Guild Ball and they would ask me, hey, are you going to do Guild Ball? And I'd be like, no. Absolutely not. And then there's like a tipping point. You're like, okay, fine. I'll look into it. And
yeah.
Then you know, look into it, get excited about it, and then just go down the path. But
and it's new and new things are fun. And it's fun getting into a community that is new because you kind of get to grow and learn with them and you don't feel like you're always playing catch up. Like there are a lot of things that kind of coalesce to make Guild Ball so popular in my brain.
Right. So any last getting to know you thoughts or ideas before we move on to the next topic?
No, you can follow me on Twitter, I suppose, if you want to do that. I'm at @absolute_class there, and you can probably get to know me pretty well there because I'm loud on Twitter. So
excellent. I do follow you on Twitter.
I know.
Okay, so let's move on to topic two of the episode. This one, we asked... Our next episode is going to be a question and answer episode. One of the questions that got posted, maybe we'll cover a couple of them, but one of them we thought would be good to spend a little bit more dedicated time with. So this question is from Eric Festa. He says, would love an episode about some of the struggles a new meta may face, especially tough matchups between teams that may leave a bad impression of the game balance overall. Love what you're doing so far. Keep it up. Okay, so go ahead, Alex.
This is kind of an involved question because struggles new metas may face, like socially or just getting people to play the game. I'm curious as to what he meant there specifically. I guess obviously the tough matchups thing. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean I think it'll be good for us to break it down into multiple parts. It does feel like a multi-prong question. Why don't we start with he says one thing in particular. Especially tough matchups between teams that would leave a bad impression of the game balance overall. So I've actually seen this a lot in various different games where you play a game, and let's say that there's a player who starts getting good at the game faster than other players in the meta,
mm-hmm.
it's really common for the other players to be like, oh my god, the fishermen are absolutely broken. Or, you know, in a lot of ways, it doesn't really even matter what the guild is, because almost any faction or guild or whatever in a game can end up thinking, in these types of games especially, that, you know, there's one that's completely broken. So, what do you do, I guess, to combat that type of thought or thought process among players?
Well, I don't know. I think there are a few things that you can do. Number one, if you recognize that you're the person, like if you are the person in that position who's beating everyone, you could very easily just take a step back and watch some people play games for a little while and kind of like fade into the background and use the knowledge that you've gained to elevate the people around you instead of just beating the crap out of them, kind of half-heartedly telling them what they did wrong and then going on to beat the crap out of somebody else, you know?
I don't know. Carl, what are some of your thoughts on it?
This is an interesting question, because I was just having a conversation yesterday with one of our local guys who was actually turned away from the game because a lot of the games he has seen has been so one-sided. There's just a natural advantage that people who have played miniature games have against other people, and it's causing the games that he's watching to just be landslides. So it's ultimately pushing him away. He doesn't want to play the game because of it. He says there's a lot of balance issues because of it, but I don't know. I think it just takes an overall commitment from the veteran players to sit down with the newer players, kind of teach them, you know, explain what's going on, try to help them in their bad matchups, or just to help them play more efficiently.
Okay. So I think part of the issue as well is that, you know, let's say that there was a local community where chess was starting to take off. Chess is a very well-balanced game, obviously.
I would hope so.
So you're still going to have situations where, you know, some players are trouncing other players. With a game like Guild Ball, it obviously is not perfectly balanced. Well, and obviously there's arguments on the balance of chess, whatever. But it's not as balanced as chess. So it does... I guess one of the conundrums that people can have is that the reality is there are some games where the game balance just fucking sucks. And so it's, you don't want to, everyone, our most precious resource is time. And so you don't want to, you know, devote a bunch of time to a game and then realize, oh, this sucks. I devoted this time to the game and the game designers did a poor job and the game isn't balanced. So I guess one of the questions I would throw out is, A, do you think that Guild Ball has a pretty good balance? And B, how do you think people can tell whether or not a game has a good balance or not?
I think the game has a very good balance right now for the limited number of models that are available. I mean, it's still a young and budding game, but I think it has a tremendous amount of balance. But that's just what I've seen. But, you know, I'm all in the everything is shiny stage right now, and everything right. is awesome. And so, I mean,
everything is cool when you're part of a team. Alex, what do you think?
I don't know. Like, I agree with what Carl said, that the game does feel pretty well balanced, given that there's no point value for models or anything along those lines. And like, while a hot topic about it is should denial exist in this game? And I feel like right now they've done a really good job putting the game in a place where everyone can do most of the things that they want to do, but they will accomplish them in different ways. And I think that's fine. In terms of recognizing balance in a game, honestly, Jay, I don't know. Like, it's kind of, for me, when I'm playing a game, it's a gut feeling that I have to temper with the idea of, okay, but I also don't have as much data as the people who have, like, play-tested the game have, per se. So I have a hard time actually coming to a decision on whether or not I feel like a game is properly balanced or not. You know, it's kind of just like, either I enjoy playing it and I feel like I usually have a chance, or I don't enjoy playing it because I don't feel like I have a chance, you know?
Yeah. I think another thing, piece of the puzzle for me as well, is, you know, as a retailer, I get tons of games that go in and out of the store. And obviously, for a long time, I've been solely focused on playing War Machine. And so, you know, when I initially heard about Guild Ball, I was like, okay, another miniatures game. Who fucking cares? but part of what piqued my interest was that people who I trusted their opinion on, and people who had spent a large amount of time playing the game, you know, they told me, A, you're going to really like this game, and B, it's really well balanced. And so I think that it is okay sometimes to, you know, especially when you're trying to decide, am I going to allocate time to learning this game? I think it's okay to try to take the shortcut of, you know, getting some information from outside sources on how good the game is.
I mean, that's just being a responsible consumer.
Sure. And, you know, then as to yourself, there's kind of a interesting topic with it where, and David Sirlin talks a little bit about this in Plain Twin, and it's sort of funny. There's some people who love that book. There's some people who think it's awful or that it's boring or shallow. And maybe everyone's right. I don't know. But one of the things he says is that a lot of times when people have sort of these issues where, you know, they think that X is too strong and Y is too weak, etc., that a lot of time it's because there hasn't been enough thought into the depth of the game, how to, you know, take advantage of your strengths, how to exploit the weaknesses of the faction or guild or whatever that you're trying to overcome. And I think that that's true a lot of the times, that, you know, rather than spend the time or the effort in trying to figure out how am I going to, you know, beat this issue which is giving me a problem, instead a lot of people just throw up their hands like, oh, well, the game's not balanced.
Mm-hmm. It's easier that way.
Yeah. Well, and I also, I think that one of the things that can be good for a community or good for a player or whatever is that when, you know, there are these challenges that are taking place in a community, I actually think it's really fun to try to figure out, okay, this strategy is dominant right now. What can we do to beat it? And I think that that's a fun, engaging, intellectual thought process. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm sure there's some people where that's not the case, but, and maybe if that's not the case, then maybe Guild Ball isn't for you or these type of games aren't for you, but, and that's okay. I mean, not every game is for everyone, but I don't know. Let's delve into a real life example within the game. So what would you say is an example of a matchup within Guild Ball that you would say is kind of disadvantage for one of the sides? Is there one that you can think of off the top of your head?
I would say Brewers versus Butchers.
Okay.
I think the Brewers are extremely disadvantaged.
Okay. So why do you think that is? And obviously the Brewers have tough hide, so,
right,
which is going to deduct one damage off of everything.
I think their sole design is to kind of get in there and stick in there and be resilient and stick around. But the Butchers just hit so hard, any focused attacks, I think, will just circumvent all the Brewers' defensive abilities. Mm-hmm. And the Brewers don't hit hard enough to stick it back to them. So.
Especially when you consider that the Brewers' core mechanic is knockdown, and if you knock down somebody in melee, they really don't care.
So, I think this is a really good example. So, I think that this is an example of, you know, on the initial look at the matchup, you're going to be like, oh, this is kind of awful for the Brewers. So let's take it a step further. Let's say that you're the Brewers player. Let's say you've gotten your ass handed to you a couple times by the Butchers. How do you react? What do you do? Is your initial reaction like, oh, well, that sucks, I'm gonna quit the game now?
The Brewers are terrible. They're an awful faction.
No, time to buy a new faction. Gonna start playing the Fishermen.
Well, I don't know. I think you have to realize that the Butchers also don't necessarily like focused attacks upon them. Like, their tough hide is not very prevalent in that faction. Like, and it's all, admittedly, it exists in Brewers, but I don't think it's as prevalent as maybe it should be, per se, for them to do the thing that they want to do. But they're, like, it's hard because I feel like the Butchers are weirdly ended up being, like, this really well-rounded team because Brisket's such a goddamn good striker.
Right.
So, like, you can, and they got a goalkeeper. So, like, you can look at that matchup and be like, okay, well, maybe I can just outscore him. But Tenderizer is a real fucking problem if you have no way of handling him. But luckily, with Stave, you actually have a fairly easy way of handling him. You can just push him out of the way and set up a goal in that way. So, I think they play similar games, but I think the Butchers are way more straightforward. So, you might be able to kind of outmaneuver, and I don't necessarily mean physically, like, outmaneuver model-wise, but outmaneuver strategically to manufacture, like, splitting of forces with Stave. Again, Stave, a really key piece for the Brewers, obviously. so the butchers can't gang up on you, which they really like to do, and maybe get some goal scoring production out of that. Because frankly, Friday also a very good striker.
Yeah, I think Friday's an incredible piece, but she hasn't seen a lot of love here locally.
Mm.
But I think, going back to your question, Jay, it all depends on the player. I mean, you've got to determine whether or not it's actually the faction, and if there's a disparity between power levels, or it might just be the person that you're playing against. I mean, he might just be that much better than you, and I don't know how you overcome something like that without just lots of practice.
Well, I think one of the key things with it, so let's, when I'm dealing with like this sort of problem, usually what I'll do is first I'll say to myself, okay, what has been happening that hasn't been working? So let's say, for example, that I've been getting tag teamed up on, my players have been getting taken out, Brisket's scoring, etc. So that's the problem. What's the solution? What have I been doing? Well, or what can I do in the future? What strengths does my guild have that I'm not taking advantage of? So, for example, one strength you might not have been taking advantage of, and as you read your cards, etc., your playbook, obviously the Brewers have a ton of reach. They have a ton of knockdown, and they have a ton of pushes. So I think that one of the things that a player may not realize initially with the Brewers is that in a lot of ways they're kind of a control faction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you are trying to have a head-on confrontation with the Butchers, you're probably going to have a bad time. But instead, you're going to put some influence on one of your models, you're going to move in, you're going to do some damage, you're going to knock down their opponent, and then you're going to push them out of their melee reach range. And, you know, you're going to be trying to control the engagement. And, you know, one of the things that can suck sometimes for a player is that a lot of times a player will buy into a guild thinking that it's going to be a certain play style. And when they start playing it, when they start having different matchups, what they have to do to win or what the strength of the faction may be that they didn't realize when they purchased it might not be what they desired when they got into the faction. And I think that can be a pretty legitimate reason to end up looking at switching guilds. But, I don't know, what do you guys think of that? Do you think that that's a good method to try to, I guess, suss out how to improve a matchup?
I think those are great ways just to improve your game overall. I mean, if you can do that after every matchup, I think it's going to make you leaps and bounds a better player.
Sure. That's the 5-minute warning. Alex, what do you think about things?
I agree. I think it's hard in the moment to tell. Again, this, you know, I think this has been spouted about every instance of competition that has ever existed on the face of the earth, but it's important to take a step back and look at things objectively to like actually understand what is going on without your emotion affecting how you're perceiving things. And like, into that sense, like you can do something as much as recording games if you feel like that's important and you want to rewatch tapes, or you can just take notes about moves that have happened. And like taking a day or even a couple of hours to go back to wait and then go back and look at those notes can really affect how you perceive the information that's being given to you.
Okay. So, since the 5-minute warning's off, we obviously don't have a ton of time left in the episode, but let's go back and cover the, rest of the topic that he had. What are some of the struggles that a new meta may face?
Kind of just getting people to play the game. I feel like right now it's a lot of people who have kind of nestled into whatever game they want to play, be it something like Magic or War Machine, whatever. Like it can be really, really hard just to get people to give you the time, like to see what the game is about.
Yeah. I mean, getting people interested, I think that one of the things that will help is I think that Steamforge did a great job making models that look very good. The models are dynamic. If you get them painted, it definitely helps, the appeal of the game, and also I think that the mats that they made, both the Classic Pitch and the Proving Grounds, if you're playing on those, I think it also makes for a more visually appealing game.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, let's say that you're playing in a game store, I think that if you start being regular in getting your game times in, a game night, etc., that there does start to be interest, that it'll start to generate interest. And I think another thing that people get really worried about is kind of what I mentioned before, you know, how, oh, here's another miniatures game, why the fuck should I care? And so I think that if you show that you are interested in the game over an extended period of time, that will also generate interest, because people don't want to dedicate their time, they don't want to dedicate their money to a game that's going to be gone in a couple weeks. And,
yeah,
and that's very, very common in game stores.
Right. I think another factor is the pundit. I mean, if you have a guy who's like, here, let me give you a demo, and he's just kicking the shit out of everyone, you know, making an unfun matchup for everyone, then that causes a lot of issues.
Yeah.
I think being aware of the up and growing players, you can't have a couple power gamers in there just stomping a bunch of people who are showing some interest in the game, because I think that might just push people away as well.
Yeah. I think it also helps as you're starting to do, you know, let's say someone has started to buy into the game, they're starting to get their games. I think that it's helpful, especially if there's a large skill disparity, and if you ask them and they say that they're, you know, interested in this type of game, but if you can see like an obvious error they're going to make, or if you see a, you know, potentially making some strategy suggestions to them, I think that that can go a long way as well. I mean, you don't want to play their game for them. You don't want to be overbearing, but, you know, I think it's good for people to, you know, hopefully, at least when I've played games of this nature, it seems like people appreciate it when, you know, you try to tell them, you know, you may not want to do that because, you know, my response would be this and it'd probably end up going poorly or whatever.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times that can kind of open a dialogue, and like I've had a few instances where, you know, we've done that with players and then they'll explain to us or to me or to whomever is doing it why they're making that decision. And then like it kind of lets you delve a little bit deeper into how they think strategically, which can kind of help you understand the decisions that, like, the decisions that they make from moment to moment, which can help you ultimately teach them better, right? Like, the more you know about how somebody thinks, the better you can educate them on what it is you're trying to educate them on. So it can really, I think that's probably the most consistently effective way, unless you have somebody who's really defensive, to kind of teach somebody, to elevate somebody into, like, if they want to be a competitive player, it's a really good way to kind of get them into that position.
So that's the 30-minute timer. One of the second announcement for the episode is that we're going to add something to the show, bonus time, where we're going to add a couple minutes of bonus time at the end for us to wrap up and give a conclusion. So I guess to wrap up this topic, one of the thoughts I have with it is that, you know, just be excited about the game, have fun, be consistent, and if you exhibit those things to your fellow players, I think that it covers up a lot of other errors or mistakes that, you know, you may have with trying to grow the game in your community. Carl, do you have any closing thoughts?
Don't be a dickhead to new players.
Okay, there you go. Alex.
I agree.
Boosh. Thanks for listening to More Menace Play. Tune in next week for another 30-minute podcast about Guild Ball.